This week we are going to continue with the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini. But before we go into that nectarous story of Lord Rama as penned by our dear Lord Sai Rama, we would like to wish each and every one of you a happy, holy, joyous and fulfilling Ganesh Chaturthi. India is a land of festivals and there are festivals almost every month, every week of the calendar year, and there is a lot of significance, there is a lot of joy, there is a lot of celebration, and it is thanks to Swami that we are able to delve into the significance of these different festivals, learn their meaning, learn the lessons that they have for us that we can adopt in life, apart from reveling in them and celebrating them. And so therefore, as we begin by offering our pranams at the lotus feet of our dear Lord Sai, as well as at the feet of Hanuman, who is ever present wherever the glory of Sri Rama is sung, we would like to begin this afternoon satsang with a little discussion on this beautiful, magnificent and important festival of Ganesh Chaturthi. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind and Sai Ram to all our listeners. It's indeed a very, very beautiful festival and it's so wonderful to have it on a Thursday. It gives us the opportunity to reflect a bit about it. But dear listeners, we must tell you that we did do a detailed afternoon satsang on the Ganesh Chaturthi, and I just checked it up before the program. It was, I think, sometime in September of 2012, the 20th of September. So if you're interested, you can look up our archives for that. There's a detailed discussion on that. More importantly, more than our discussion, I think we brought out a lot of important points that Swami makes about the festival of Ganesh Chaturthi and Ganesha as such. But as you said, it would definitely be in place to start with a small discussion on Ganesha. You know, it's one of the most fascinating characters in Hindu mythology, be it the appearance or the significance, which is very, very important. Maybe briefly, the creation of this deity of Ganesha. Arvind, I think, are you able to recollect how it comes about?
Yes, you know, the story goes, and I will be brief here, that Mother Parvati, goddess, she decides to, you know, take a bath, it is said, in the Himalayan regions, that is where Kailas is. And she tells one of the Ganas to keep guard over the place because she is taking her bath. And at that time, what happens is Lord Shiva
she asks
walks.
Nandi, I think.
Yeah, it's Nandi is the final Gana.
Okay, it's the final one.
So first she has asked a Gana, and this Gana is standing guard, and Shiva walks in. Now Shiva is the Lord of, he is their master, he is their chieftain. So the Gana doesn't stop Shiva, and after all, Shiva is Parvati's husband, so he keeps quiet. Though Parvati doesn't mind Shiva being there, she just feels that she has nobody as her own, you know, who can obey her commands. Because not only does this Gana, as you mentioned rightly, later on she even asks Nandi to stand guard. And even Nandi doesn't stop his master, which is Shiva. So when this happens 2-3 times, Parvati decides that she needs to have somebody her own, created from her own self. And it is said that she wipes off the turmeric and sandal paste that she has applied on herself. And it's, you know, if it has to be seen scientifically, we have these organisms that do budding, which is they break off a part of themselves and that little part grows into a complete organism. And in these organisms, like Hydra, there are some other organisms which grow by budding. It is called the mother and daughter, mother and daughter, and this is how it goes on. Mm-hmm. There's no son and father there.
Okay.
So anyway, according to mythology, she takes off the sandal paste and with that creates the idol of a little boy and breathes life into it. And she calls this boy as her son and tells her son to guard the gates when she is having her bath. And this son has implicit obedience to his mother. And you know, he stops anybody who is trying to enter there.
Right.
So when Shiva is stopped, Shiva is upset. He says, "Who are you? I've never seen you before. You're stopping me entering my own home." He says, "No, till mother finishes bath, you can't enter." Shiva is enraged. He tries to fight. It is said that Shiva is defeated. Not only Shiva, his whole horde of Ganas, Nandi, everyone. And so it becomes like a major, issue, you know. So Shiva goes and seeks the help of other gods, it is said, Vishnu, Kartikeya, all, everybody, they keep coming and everybody is defeated by this little boy and nobody is able to enter. Finally, what happens is, the two supreme heads, that is Shiva and Vishnu, they decide that there is no way you can defeat this boy in a normal battle. So what happens is, while Vishnu and Garuda keeps the boy engaged, Shiva from behind beheads the boy with his Trishula. Or is it Vishnu who beheads? I don't know, I'm a little confused about this. Basically, these two, one of them engages the boy while the other beheads. So once the boy is beheaded and he is defeated, Shiva is able to enter. And when Parvati gets to know this, she is very upset. She is very, you know, this is the loss of her son. And, you know, you should never, ever play with the goddess. You know, I'll pause the story here a bit, Prem, because I feel it is a appropriate time to start another little discussion, which is the power of goddess. This we are discussing even in the Ramayana, you know, when we talk about Sita, calling her as Prakriti or nature. All these stories, they enhance the belief that whatever happens, you know, you should not ever play with nature. Or, you know, tamper nature, even when it is for God. You know, you can't say that I am destroying nature in an offering of love for God or in praying to God. Because Swami has always said nature is a limb of God. When you harm nature, you are harming God also. Because when nature is enraged, when nature is angered, when nature decides to show her power, we realize what that power is. You know, I think it is a time to say prayers for our brethren in Chile, in the South American country of Chile, right, which has just a few hours back been ravaged by an earthquake.
Right, exactly. A very, very powerful one. I think over 8 on the Richter scale.
8.3, yeah.
Right. Very, very, must be a very devastating earthquake. We really pray to Swami that Swami gives solace and comfort to all those people trapped over there. But going back to this, you know, it's a very significant story, as of course the rest of the story is known to us. The boy is beheaded, and to appease Mother Parvati, who is very, very upset now, they decide to transplant another head, and the Ganas are sent in search of any organism which is lying facing northwards. I think that is the command which is given. So the first thing they come across is this elephant. So they bring the elephant head and it is put on this boy, and that's how Ganesha is born. And as a means of reconciling, he's been blessed with a lot of boons, right? And one of it is he's made the master of all the Ganas, because he's able to defeat all of them, and that's why we worship him as Ganapati. Ganeshwara and Ganapati and such names. Of course, you know, as you said, one of the clearest and easiest way to understand the inner significance of this is to see Mother Parvati as nature, right? And a lot of significance comes from that. I was a few years back speaking to one elderly devotee who was giving his perspective of the essence of this Ganesha story.
Mm-hmm.
And as he has understood through his meditations, very, very fascinating, maybe complete, may not be comprehensive, but I think it's something for each one of us to ruminate on. We might get our own insights. He says that one thing what Parvati was trying to do was create a child of her own, right? And when you look at Shiva and Parvati, Swami says this in many of his discourses. In fact, in one of the Ganesh Chaturthi discourses, Swami describes where Parvati is Shakti, or, you know, the energy aspect of the world, and Shiva stands for Chitta. You know, when Swami says Chit, Satchitananda, that Chit, or that consciousness aspect, is Shiva. And any creation should come when there is a mix of Chitta and Shakti. Anything that comes purely from Shakti is actually not complete in itself. And that was what Parvati created, when without the, you know, consensus of Lord Shiva. And that is why he was not a complete being, and this whole drama was created to, you know, finally bring about Lord Ganesha, who will have a certain amount of contribution from Shiva too. And that is why Ganesha seems to be, you know, that coming together of this consciousness and that Shakti.
Wow.
And he went on to say that the other way of looking at it is, now Parvati, who is Shakti, wanted to create on her own. And she created a boy who is actually purity. And anything which is pure will not lead to further growth. Like, when do you procreate? You procreate after you come out of your childhood. So anybody who has that innocence of a child will not be a starting point for more creation. So if creation had to come forth from this little boy who was created by Shakti, his wise head had to be removed and an animal head had to be put there. So this is the non-deity aspect of Ganesha. So that is who does that is Shiva comes and does that. So if you want to go back to that purity, you will have to go back to that person who has done this, who has removed your wise head and put an animal head. And the only one who can do that is Lord Shiva.
Oh, that's an interesting interpretation.
Right? And he said, Lord Shiva will do that only if you are able to please him by doing his work. And that is, he said in his opinion, Swami would always insist and give many, many opportunities for us to involve in his work in some way or the other. Because these are all ways by which, you are earning brownie points to get back that head of wisdom back.
Beautiful. As I said, a very interesting interpretation. Of course, in the last satsang, that was on 2012, with the one you mentioned, we had gone into what Swami says is the significance of the elephant head, which signifies intelligence, wisdom, the large ears coupled with the small mouth, which shows that Lord Ganesha's ears are open to all, the large fan-like ears. He listens. In fact, listening is a very endangered art or ability today. Everyone is keen on speaking, yours humbly included, rather than listening, because listening itself can solve a lot of problems, can solve a lot of things that are plaguing mankind today. Coming back to this natural calamity that has struck Chile, just seeing, I saw some of the videos, how things have shaken up over there, and apparently the tremors have been felt up to Argentina. Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina, which is a neighboring country. So it's pretty much bad there. And whenever a disaster like this happens, it is definitely an exhibition of the brute force that nature is capable of. So, it's not as if to say that it would be really insensitive and cruel to say that somebody does bad and you're getting what you deserve. It's not as if Chile has done something bad and they get it, or if there's a Himalayan earthquake that people near the Himalayas have done something bad. I feel while such disasters happen, we definitely take up a lot of work on the physical and mental front. There is a kind of collective conscience, and that is one thing that we should try to foster in each one of us, that we at least feel empathy towards the people who have suffered. That's at the mental level. And at the physical level, do everything possible that we can, whether it's donating, whether it's physically going and helping, whatever we can. So that definitely, no questions about that, that has to be done. But I feel all these things, when it happens, it is also a time for some kind of a spiritual introspection to see where we have gone wrong as mankind as a whole. All said and done, when it came to the creation of Ganesha, when Parvati was upset, even Lord Shiva apparently bowed down, to Parvati. It is all the divine cosmic drama, but the divine cosmic drama has rules wherein when nature is upset, nature has to be appeased. Otherwise, nature is not going to relent. Nature will be relentless, and the destruction nature can wreak is tremendous. So, of late, I don't know if it's only me who is thinking like this, we can definitely see in the last decade the number of natural calamities and disasters are on a rise. So while we say that we are devoted to the Lord, let us remember that we can't be devoted and loving to the Lord if we are not taking care of nature or society, which are parts of the Lord, as Swami himself says, Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti, Parmeshti. So I feel when such things happen, at the physical and mental level, there are certain things that we do, but I feel none of us think of it at a spiritual level, wherein we are supposed to build in that reverence, the same reverence that we hold for God, we are supposed to build in that same reverence towards nature also, and live in that humility that we are but nothing in the cosmic play.
That's very true, but in a sense, you know, this disregard for nature is actually an offshoot of a disregard for God himself. You know, the more people were devoted, the more people felt that they were, you know, living under the grace of God, I think automatically you tend to treat everything in nature as a reflection of God. Like, you know, you looked at sometime back, somebody was just playing us a small clip of a man who was speaking about a disrespect to Gomata, you know. He said, see, we have come from a tradition which for ages together we have looked up to the cow as a mother. And now it is like we are questioning things which moves which are meant to protect that you know, divine being. It is because we have already moved on to a state where we are looking at it as a commodity. Already we are seeing that, you know, how many liters of milk can you give? You know, for how many years can you give? How fertile?
How many pounds of flesh when you die?
It's already gone on to that. That is because we've already we've gone to a mechanistic, you know, mechanized way of living by thinking that, okay, this is what I can get from here. This is what I have to invest to get this much. It is completely moved away from that respect to divinity itself. In fact, that is what actually this whole story shows, where, you know, if you look at Parvati as a representation of nature, and all said and done, man also is a part of nature. When nature thinks that it can do things on its own, when man thinks that I can stand on my own and I don't need the support of divinity to create, to propagate, that is when the creation actually loses stability. And this whole thing of Lord Shiva stepping in with his entire army and his, you know, Lord Vishnu and Subramanya and everybody, and coming to, of course, I think Subramanya comes later, but all the other gods to come and attack this being, which is actually a product of nature's feeling that I can do it on my own, of man trying to think that I can be on my own. I think this whole Ganesha episode is a sign of that aspect.
Definitely, you know, as I would like to reiterate, in case it is misunderstood, that by this we are not trying to state that the affected people are guilty of crimes or anything like that. It's not like that. You know, many times it so happens that in your body, some part of the body gets diseased, some other part suffers because of that. Because it just shows the interconnectedness that exists in the body. In the same manner, when you see innocent people suffering, as in the case of the body, you see that you eat something bad, the tongue, because it loves the taste, goes and eats something heavy in fat, the heart gets the attack. The heart didn't do the crime. You can't say, heart, that you got the attack, it's your problem. Because it's not the problem of the heart alone, because if anything happens to the heart, the tongue also dies.
Right.
So when you see an innocent organ suffering on behalf of a guilty organ, and at the same time, when you see an innocent organ suffering on behalf of a guilty organ, it just shows the interconnectedness that exists in the body. In the same way, when you see, for example, before this we had the Nepal earthquake, it would be brutal to say that, you know, Nepalese, you have been bad, you have been wrong, and you are being punished. It's not like that. It just shows that in the organism, in the body, there is something wrong, and the body here is the world. There is something wrong, because of which, apparently randomly there are problems occurring in different parts of the world, be it Chile, be it Nepal, someday it's India, someday it's Pakistan, someday it's ISIS, and all these problems, if you see, these problems are either nature or societal. So definitely I feel that we can use this festival of Ganesh Chaturthi in order to awaken in ourselves an empathy and a heightened sense of interconnectedness that exists, because that is the truth. We are all interconnected. We can't be happy when somebody else is sad. We can't build on our fortunes on the misery of someone else. We need to empathize. We need to feel that oneness. And it is not for some God realization or becoming a spiritual guy or having an aura around the head that we need to do it. We will realize that our survival, our peace, our joy as humankind, as humanity, depends on our ability to see this oneness that exists in the entire world.
Of course, something which is completely different from this, again, an interpretation of Lord Ganesha. And I think it's not a very far-fetched interpretation. I think those who are familiar with the Kundalini system, I am not familiar.
Okay.
Just got a little information which probably I am sharing with all our listeners. You know, the base chakra, which is called the Muladhara chakra, you know, the first chakra, I think there's supposed to be seven leading to the final of
just a second.
Sahasrara.
There is this Vedic thing, Tvam Muladhara Sthitosi Nityam.
Exactly. So that Muladhara chakra's deity, ruling deity is Lord Ganesha.
Oh, okay. So the first step.
The first step is Lord Ganesha. And that is why we always represent Ganesha as that, you know, innocent childlike God. Because that nature of that Muladhara chakra is innocence and childlike nature. And the deity on that, you know, now if you see that story which we just narrated, it actually falls into place because that Kundalini Shakti which rises is nothing but Devi. It's Shakti. That's why it's called Kundalini Shakti. And it is also referred to as Mula Prakriti, which is represented by Mother Sita, represented by Parvati and all these goddesses whom we worship.
You know, this is very, very interesting because afterwards, as you said, a lot of boons are given to Lord Ganesha. One among those boons is that you will be the one to receive the first worship before any other worship.
Right.
And we see that happening. In fact, you know, today as we did the Ganesha Puja, when we do any puja, whether it's Satyanarayan Puja or Vishnu or Shiva, for anyone when we do, before we do that puja, no, we do a puja to a little Ganesha. Create a little mud Ganesha
or a
silver Ganesha and we worship Ganesha. You know the interesting thing, Prem? Even before doing Ganesha Puja, Ganesh Chaturthi Puja, that little Ganesh Puja is done. I used to always, you know, get confused as a child, but today I know the significance. But you know, because you're worshipping Ganesha.
Exactly, and interestingly, that small Ganesha is made of, in Telugu, what you call pasupu, which is turmeric.
Turmeric, yes.
That's how Ganesha was created initially, you know, from the turmeric paste. That first Ganesha which you just described, we worship to, we take turmeric and we make that Ganesha. And
it'll be just like a pyramid,
right,
a mound,
right,
a conical mound, that's
right.
All. So even while worshipping Ganesha, this is done first. And it's interesting that you say that in the Kundalini Yoga, there also the first is Ganesha.
Exactly.
It's almost like Ganesha is the gateway. It reminds me of a very important point that Swami made in a discourse. I'm not recollecting which discourse. But see, Ganesha is worshipped as the Lord of Obstacles. But you know, there's one interesting point here we have to keep in mind, that Lord of Obstacles doesn't mean just Vignaharta. We think he's Vignaharta, which means one who removes all obstacles. That is why we worship him first. And that is the logic given for why Ganesha is the first deity to be worshipped, because even in the worship of any god, if there is any obstacle, oh Ganesha, please remove it. But Swami says, Ganesha is also called Vigna Karta, which means one who puts obstacles. Now what is this? How can the one who clears obstacles also be the one who puts obstacles? It becomes very clear when you remember Ganesha as the elephant. You know, when the elephant marches in the jungle, it just clears a path for itself. Whatever, whether there's a thorny scrub, whether there's a tree, there's a bush, doesn't matter, rocks, logs, everything is cleared, and wherever the elephant walks, that is the path. That is the Vigna Harta role of Ganesha, you know, because wherever Ganesha decides to go, that it becomes a path. He makes a path actually. Elephants are path makers in the jungle, so is Ganesha. He'll make a path where none exists. At the same time, you know, when once I remember we were traveling through this Bandipur sanctuary, when you travel from Karnataka to Kerala by road, you have to go through this. Often you encounter wild animals. Once there was this elephant that had come and blocked the road. When the elephant blocks the road, you can't do anything. They just stop the vehicle and wait for the elephant to clear out. They don't honk, they don't try anything, because in case the elephant is upset, it can easily come pick up your vehicle, car, and chuck it out. If you are a bus, possibly it can't lift you, but it can definitely push you out of the road and give you a battering. So you just can't do anything. If an elephant decides to be on the road, you just can't go. And that is the Vigna Karta part of Ganesha, where Swami says that if the endeavor that you have taken up is noble and good, and you don't know how to go about it, don't worry, Ganesha will make a path for you. He'll thrash out a path and clear up a way for you to do it. But if what you have taken up is not right, is not correct, is not noble, the same Ganesha who can create a path out of nothing can himself become the obstacle and stop you from going ahead. as a corollary to this, what I feel is, I feel this is a more important lesson. The corollary to this is that if at all we feel that our persistent and patient, perseverant efforts are not fructifying, it is just Ganesha's way of saying that, dear one, just see there is something wrong that you are doing. Just notice that and correct it. Once it's corrected, I myself will make a path for you to go through. So when things we are not finding success or we are not finding fruition in our efforts, it's not time to get depressed. We should just know that the Lord Ganesha, who clears path for us, see, when we meet with success, we worship Ganesha and thank him for it. But when we don't meet with success also, we have to worship Ganesha, because we have to realize, we have to pray to Ganesha, Lord, give me the understanding, give me the discrimination, give me the wisdom to realize what is it that I am doing wrong so that I can correct it, so that you can move out of the road and we can proceed to the sanctuary, proceed through the sanctuary.
Right. There's a lot of beautiful, understanding to be gone through in this very thing which you said. The same Lord who is the remover of the obstacles is the one who places obstacles. One of the main purposes you are supposed to worship Ganesha is for getting buddhi. Mm. Like, whenever students start their education, they're supposed to start with Ganesh Prarthana. And because it is the one, he's the one who actually raises your intellectual discriminatory power. So similarly, even in mythology, there are a lot of stories where there would be these asuras or these people who try to get something done or go ahead and do something, where it is Ganesha will come and bring the obstacle in front of them. I think that one of the most famous stories is that of Ravana. When Correct. He tries to get the Atmalingam from Lord Shiva, through his penance, he pleases Lord Shiva and gets the Atmalinga. And then Lord Shiva, indicates to Ganesha, he says, look, I have to give him, he has prayed to me and I have to answer his prayer, but he has not worshipped you. That is a rule. Everybody who worships any god will have to worship you, Ganesha, and he has not done that, so you are free to place obstacles in front of him. And that is how Ganesha goes as a small boy and, tricks Ravana into keeping the Atmalinga. I think it's in Gokarna, right? In Karnataka.
Hmm.
Where he places that Atmalingam in Gokarna, which is still a very, very sacred spot right now. But this is what Ganesha does, and that is why actually you pray to Ganesha before you start something. Because he is supposed to give you the buddhi to whether to think whether what I'm going to do is right or wrong. Is it right to do it or not right? And that is why before trying to accomplish anything, pray to Lord for that buddhi. I want this, but Lord, please tell me whether it is right or not to want it. Then let me put all my effort in that direction.
Perfectly put. As you said, on the physical plane, it is worshipping Ganesha, that endearing form, getting attached to it. But at a spiritual level, it's about discriminating before doing anything. Look before you leap, as they say in that proverb. It's all about discrimination. That is what Lord Ganesha's worship symbolizes. Another interesting point, that came to my mind is, you were saying about how this disregard for nature and disregard for society is actually coming out of disregard for God. That is very, very true. And therefore, when you see Swami on the surface, it appears, how is Swami going to help the world? Many people ask like this at a very superficial level. There is so much of poverty, there is war going on. How you this person tells to do some bhajans over here, how is that going to help?
Mm-hmm.
While everyone is looking at symptomatic relief, Swami always goes to the root. And as Swami says, it is, what is that? Sanganiti. Daiva Preeti, Papa Bhiti, Sanganiti.
Right.
We want morality in society. That is what is the symptom. But Sanganiti comes because Papa Bhiti is gone. Fear of sin is gone. And fear of sin is gone because love for God has declined.
Right.
And the avatar comes and tries to treat at the root. Because though the fruit is the one that is rotting, the problem is in the root. Once the root is set right, the fruit also becomes fine. So people who look at the fruit, they say, what is this? The fruit is so far away from the root and you're treating the root. The root solution for all this is to increase love for God, Daiva Preeti. And that is symbolized, this message is strongly given to us by a very unlikely creature, which is Ganesha's mount. The vehicle on which Ganesha rides is a rat. It seems like a cruel joke by destiny that an elephant god rides on a rat. But again, it's so filled with metaphors. The rat Incidentally, you know, one of Swami's favorite questions used to be, he would come to the students and ask, do you know the name of Ganesha's rat? Do you know Ganesha's rat's name, Prem? Ganesha's rat is called Anindya.
Okay.
Oh, Anindya means one who does not criticize. And Swami would tell this, and then Swami would go on to dilate on the nature of the rat. Swami says, you see the rat. The rat is a creature that will pick up anything that it finds interesting and take it back to its bill. Take it back to its hole, rat hole. And if you open up a rat hole, you will find a lot of funny things. Little bits of biscuits, some plastic pieces, a battery. Imagine what will a rat want to do with a battery. But it will be there. Some glass pieces. Every kind of imaginable thing will be in that rat's rat hole. Irrespective of whether it will be useful for the rat or not. Swami says, similarly is the human mind. The human mind just goes externally outward and whatever it thinks is interesting keeps getting and stuffing it in. You don't even know whether that will be useful for you or not. So Swami would say, therefore, don't be like a rat, be like Anindya. What does Anindya do? Anindya is always at the feet of Ganesha. And you know, it's always at the feet of Ganesha and therefore, what it eats, what it stays on is exactly what is offered to Ganesha. Imagine. Prasadam, Naivedyam becomes Prasadam for Anindya. And again the metaphor goes further because that is how it is. Our mind is like that rat when Lord is like the Ganesha. And if we try to understand the Lord, it is like, you know, it is like the difference between a rat and an elephant. So we just cannot understand the Lord, but you surrender to Him and be at His feet always. If you do that, that's enough because that Anindya is given the strength to carry Ganesha. So you will never be able to understand the Lord, but surrender at the Lord and keep your mind at His feet. That is what Swami also said, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. Keep your mind at His feet. Don't allow the mind to wander and collect all rubbish to take back home. Then you will be bestowed with the capacity to carry the Lord in you. I mean, that is another message that comes through.
You know, maybe I'm just letting out a little bit of surprise we kept for the evening program, but last evening we went to the school in Parthi here, the Ishwarama school, and randomly we were just asking some children about Ganesh Chaturthi and the festival and all that, and we had our Ganesh posing this question to one of the kids there, you know, why do you have this small mushka being the vahana of that big elephant faced Lord. And of course one of the answers which came was this beautiful answer saying that, you know, when God picks you, He gives you the power to, you know, accomplish anything. The other child gave a very interesting answer. I mean, I've never thought of it that way. You know, this boy said, God is trying to give us the the message that nobody is big or small in this world. Somebody might appear big and somebody might appear small, but they are equal. And that is what Ganesha tried to show us, that see, even though this Mushika appears small, I have full trust in him. You know, I have befriended him because I don't have this difference of me being big and he being small. So that's a very beautiful way of looking at it. I think only a child can come up with that. And probably one other thing which, you know, this festival of Ganesha, why Swami gave so much of importance to Ganesh Chaturthi, especially when it came in relation with the students. You know, Swami would all, if there is one thing which is common to all institutions of Swami, you know, especially the educational institutions, I think it is that Ganesha statue. Be it in the hostel, be it in the prayer hall, be it in the university buildings, institute buildings, you would always find that Ganesha idol somewhere, you know, placed in a very prominent place so that the students can, you know, offer their worship on their way to the class. This is a very important thing because, you know, one of the problems which the Indian in Hinduism as such faced was some kind of misconception about the means of attaining spiritual enlightenment. You know, one of it was tantric and, you know, some of these sexual methods which were propagated sometime in the medias. It actually comes from the idea of this Kundalini thing, you know, the concept of Kundalini. It is believed that through some of these acts, you can actually reach a higher Kundalini state. And that is what Tantra actually says. But that is where the Mooladhara actually comes as a very important place. Because Mooladhara stands for innocence. And if you do not go past that stage of innocence, if you do not go past that stage where you conquer innocence and when you exude innocence, you actually cannot go to the higher stages. And that is why the worship of Ganesha gives you that innocence. And that discrimination is a native quality of every child that is born. And that is what Ganesha symbolized. And now if you look at that whole story of Ganesha being the one who was guarding Parvati when she was having bath, it's actually true in each one's body. Because it is Mooladhara Ganesha who is sitting there and stopping anybody from reaching that Kundalini Shakti who is below Ganesha. He is actually the one who is sitting and guarding her. And I think the other day I was talking to Sai Prakash, and he was talking to one of our lecturers who was studying this in much detail about the Kundalini Yoga and all that. And he was saying that one of the insights that Swami gave him was, there is actually only one way you can raise your Kundalini, and that is through love. And he said only that pure devotion to God, the ability to, you know, when you look at that story, only Shiva could enter. Nobody can stop Shiva, and that is why that one boy who was created by Parvati to stop Shiva was removed and Ganesha was put there. Now Ganesha will allow even Shiva to go in. And the only one who can raise that Kundalini without having you having to do all these, you know, yogic and tantric things is that love for God. And only Shiva can enter and raise that state. And that is why nothing is more greater than devotion to the Lord.
On that note, dear listeners, we will conclude our introduction, which has, I think, completed almost half of our satsang, but we felt it was necessary. And before we complete this introduction and go to a song, once again, we would request all of our brothers, sisters across the globe to keep our brothers and sisters in Chile, in South America, in the hearts, in the prayers, in the minds, so that they get the strength necessary to go through this very tough ordeal. We'll take a little break, on the other side of which we will take up the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini, which is scheduled for this week.
Mangala Daya Mangala Murti Moriya. तव गुण गायक कृपावंत हो प्रभु गुण ग्राहक
back, dear listeners. That was our latest audio special. Thanks to our brothers from the Institute, Amay Deshpande, and the children from the Ishwarama School, and of course that was arranged by our own Anirudh. Moving now to the Ramakatha Raswaini, we recollected so beautiful concepts and things about Ganesha. Today we also have the pleasure of going through another very beautiful episode in the Ramayana. The meeting of a very, very pious devotee with Lord Rama.
Exactly, you know, we had, I think, last fortnight reached that point where the brothers have killed Kabanda and redeemed him. Redemption came in different ways. One is by killing, the other is through receiving of love and showering love. Jatayu was the one who got redeemed that way. I think possibly Jatayu is the character who got redeemed in both ways, you know, who got killed at the same time, got love from the Lord. But Swami writes that as the brothers walk, out of the blue appears an old woman who is bent with age, who is, you know, using a walking stick. Her skin is wrinkled and she's wearing a very worn out sari, and everything about her looks very old and forlorn, except the joy that is exuding from her face. With great joy she comes ahead. And seeing this funny mixture of everything else being forlorn but face being like this, Lakshmana is on his guard. Lakshmana thinks that is it some other demon. You know, these demons come in any form. They come as, imagine they come as a beautiful damsel that Shurpanaka did. They come as a deer. You have no idea how they'll come again next. So he draws his sword from the scabbard and is ready to, you know, possibly behead at the slightest command from Rama. But you know, Rama's command is different. Rama just smiles and tells Lakshmana to calm down and be peaceful and loving. Because Rama knows everything. At this point, you know, again, Prem, one little thought that comes is, look at this. Shurpanakha transforms into the most beautiful damsel that one can ever imagine. And Rama doesn't even cast a glance at her. And when she tries to come near Rama, Rama looks at Lakshmana and signals, we spoke about that, to chop off her ear and nose. And here is, in quotes, an old hag, an old lady who's not at all, you know, good looking, nothing. And she is coming towards Rama and Rama welcomes her. I feel this in itself is symbolic of the truth that the Lord sees beyond what we try to portray, what we appear. He looks deep within what we are. Because if deep within there is purity, there is goodness, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, what the physical appearance is, what, nothing else matters. And that is a very, very positive and cheerful thing for all of us, because what we have become today, you know, in terms of our circumstance, in terms of our body, our mind, everything, we can blame it on destiny, fate, whatever. But you know, the beautiful part is the Lord doesn't look at that at all. The Lord looks only deep within at our heart, and that heart is in our control, right? We can choose whether we want to give our heart to the Lord or not. See, there also, Shurpanaka chose to give her heart to the Lord, but the purity differed. And purity is totally in our control. We can choose to be pure or not be pure. And so therefore, while it is a cautioning note for all of us, at the same time it's also a very cheerful note for us, because though I may not have anything, all I need to have is just a pure heart, and I know my Lord will respond the way the Lord responded to that old woman who happens to be Shabari.
Very true, and you know, it's a beautiful character nonetheless. But one striking difference I found, you know, between the narrative which Swami gives and the depiction which we usually see is one thing where, you know, Shabari comes and she's cleaning the pathway. That's her everyday ritual. She would clear that path which she believes that Rama and his brother would take to come to the ashram where she's living in. So she bumps into these two people and then she says, you know, move away, I'm doing my work, don't stop me. And then the truth is revealed to her that they were the people whom she is clearing the path for.
Oh, is this the original?
I mean, that's how most people depict it, you know, the way she's suddenly thrilled with that thing. But the way Swami writes it, it's so beautiful that at the first sight she realizes that this is the person. You know, this is the being I've been waiting for so long. You must be. That's how the conversation starts. You know, she says, you must be the Lord I'm waiting for. I think that's a very, very beautiful message, that if your heart is really pure and devoted, I think you will recognize God the moment you see. You don't need introductions. You don't need reminders and, you know, connecting points or anything like that. The moment you see, you will know.
That is one point. The other point about the same thing is, you will not have doubt after that.
Right.
You know, you have seen your Lord. It's not just that you recognized your Lord at first sight or you knew it. It is not that next day you think, hey, was that really the Lord I was waiting for? So, you know, I use this because there are some instances when, you know, people say that here is this person, you know, I can feel Swami speaking through him. Fine, it's fine. You feel Swami speaking through him. But the same people, you know, afterwards when something doesn't go right, they say, you know, that was not right. That fellow turns out to be wrong or a crook or whatever. You know, but the thing is, when your faith is 100%, your faith itself will protect you. It doesn't, in the sense, you know, in that matter, whether the world considers that person to be divine or not, your faith will take care of you. And such a kind of faith, if you have to get, you know, it is easy to say that if you have absolute faith, it doesn't matter. If I have absolute faith in this water bottle in front of me, yes, this water bottle becomes divine. So in that sense, everything is divine. Yes, it's easy to say that. And therefore to think that, you know, this question we had discussed, I may be going in a little more detour, but I think since it has come, let me mention it. A question was being discussed as to what is the need for an avatar? If faith is what matters, see, if I have complete faith in this bottle, then I'll get the experience through this bottle. Why do I need an avatar? So, even those who claim to be like Swami, those who act like Swami, it's fine, right? Because it's after all my faith that matters. It doesn't matter whether they're really Swami or not. It is right if we have that faith. But I feel that, as I said, it's an easy statement to make that if I have faith. Because that kind of faith comes only from absolute purity. Otherwise, it will not be there. Why take the case of somebody who we feel through whom Swami is acting? Take Swami directly. How many times have we doubted our own Swami? How many times have we felt that, oh, Swami, why are you not doing this? We have doubted His omnipresence. We have doubted His omniscience. We have doubted His omnipotence. We have done this so many times with our own Swami, who is the avatar. So, we have not had that kind of faith even in Swami. We don't have that faith in Swami itself. And the only reason for that is because we don't have that purity. So therefore, it is, you know, all this originated, but when you said that at first sight she recognized, it was her purity that made her recognize the Lord at first sight. And it is her purity that ensured that she didn't get any doubts later on. So therefore, when we get doubts, let us realize that it is only a time for us to increase our purity, because a pure person is always peaceful, is always doubt-free.
Going back to this incident, you know, how fascinating it would be, you're miles and thousands of miles away from your, home city, you're traveling in between thick jungles and forests, where you bump into this elderly woman who says that I've been waiting here for years for you, and you are so and so, you're the Prince of Ayodhya, you're Lakshmana, and you know the whole story she knows, and she's waiting there. And that's how fascinating it is. You know, sometimes you think that the Ramayana and this Mahabharata, we've heard it so many times that we miss the thrills of such moments. You know, when you hear it as a story for the first time, looking back, we don't know when was that first time we ever heard that story. You know, it's because it's like, it's part of us. But to think of it, you know, what a fascinating story is. Suddenly he meets this old lady and she's telling all the, you know, background of his history and his kingdom and everything. But then she goes on to tell how she knows that and how she has come to wait for this moment. But maybe before that, we will play a small discourse clip where Swami describes Shabari and her journey. But more than that, Swami gives a very beautiful comparison between Shabari and all these few other devotees. And it's very beautiful, this comparison which Swami gives, because I think as devotees, all of us can insert ourselves in any one of these descriptions that Swami gives. And we can see what is the way forward, because Swami is giving these examples and driving a very beautiful lesson home. We listen to that clip. It's from the 1992 summer course, 25th of May 1992.
Ramudu patita pavanudu. Rama was one who ever he patitudu, who transforms in the
Vini Yeritika Pavanam chestu vachad.
How did he convert sinners into saints?
Mottamadati patita Shabari.
The first person was Shabari.
ఈమె ఏ ఆధారము లేనటువంటిది,
షీ డిడ్ నాట్
ఏ శక్తి సామర్థ్యము లేనటువంటిది,
షీ వాస్ టోటలీ ఫర్లోర్న్, షీ హాడ్ నో వన్ టు డిపెండ్ అపాన్, దిక్కును
లేనటువంటిది,
షీ హాడ్ నో వన్ టు డిపెండ్ అపాన్,
పతిత,
షీ వాస్ ఆల్సో ఎ సిన్నర్,
అనేక విధములైనటువంటి యొక్క పాపములకు గురి అయి,
షీ హాడ్ కమిటెడ్ డిఫరెంట్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ సిన్స్,
కానీ రామచంద్రుడే నాకు దిక్కని ఆశ్రయించి.
But she took shelter under Rama as the only refuge.
Guru Agnana Puraskarinchukoni,
she followed the commands of her master.
Rama Rakaka Yedru Chustu Untundadi.
She always waited patiently for the arrival of Rama.
Yedi Chesina, Yedi Chuchina, Anta Ramachinta Chetane, Sarvakala Sarvavasari Endukudanu, Ramachintanalo Munigi Untundadi.
Whatever she did, whatever she saw, she was filled with the name of Rama, and with that kind of life he lived.
Matanga Maharshi cheppadu, Sriman Narayanudu Rama avataram etti tandri aagnanu puraskarinchukoni tapasa veshamunu dharinchi aranyamlo sancharistunnadu anetuvanti vakkunu aame chevullo vesadu.
Matanga Maharshi conveyed the news to Shabari that Narayana himself will come in human form, commanded by his father Dasaratha, into forest, in the form of a hermit, he would be coming and you could wait for him.
Atanu elanti vadu, ajanu pahudu.
What type of person was Rama?
Alanti pavitra murti mana ashramaniki vastadu.
He would come to our hermitage, such a
Shabari, aa samayamuku nenu undanu.
Shabari, I would not be alive then.
Atanini bhaktito neevu swagatam chesi,
you welcome him with full of devotion.
Atanini pujinchamani bodhinchadu.
You worship him, he said.
Aanati nundi kudanu ee Shabari ye chanamulo ye yokka gadiyalo Sri Ramachandrudu aashramaniki vastadu ani aneka vidhamuluga taanu samsiddhanga untundekuntedi.
From that moment onwards, with a lot of expectation, she was waiting for that every moment when Rama would come, with a lot of anxiety.
Ramudu tapasveshamu dharinchadata, ee aranyamulo sancharistunnadata, ataniki emaina aakali vesi, o Shabari, naaku aakali vestunnadi emaina pettamani adiginappudu edi nenu pettagalanu ani nityamu konni konni palalanu ruchi chuchedi, ataniki icchetundi palamu madhuramaina palanga untundalani tana bhavanalo chintinchi nityamu palamulanu భద్రం చేసి పెంచుకునేటువంటి.
Shabari wanted to give sweet fruits to Rama if Rama were to express a sense of hunger. She tasted all the fruits, separated the tasty ones from the others, and was waiting for Rama to come.
కనుకని ఈమె సాత్వికమైనటువంటి పతితగా మారిపోయింది.
That is how she became a sattvic
person. కష్టపడికి ఆమె ఉద్దేశమును పురస్కరించుకొని ఆమె ప్రార్థనను ఆలకించి ఆమెకు తగినటువంటి యొక్క మార్గమును ప్రబోధించి తనలో ఐక్యము గావించుకున్నాడు.
రామ షోడ్ హర్ ది ప్రాపర్ పాత్ టు హర్ అండ్ అల్టిమేట్లీ గాట్ హర్ మర్జ్డ్ ఇన్ టు హిమ్.
రెండవది గుహుడు.
ద సెకండ్ పర్సన్ ఈజ్ గుహ.
ఇతను చాలా మిత్రుడైనప్పటికీ తాను అనేక విధమైనటువంటి అన్యాయ అక్రమ ఆచారాల లోపల ప్రవేశించి తన వ్యాపారం జరుపుతూ వచ్చేటటువంటి వాడు.
నో డౌట్ గుహ వాజ్ ఎ ఫ్రెండ్, బట్ హీ హర్ క్యారీడ్ ఆన్ ఆల్ హిస్ యాక్టివిటీ నాట్ ఆన్ ద రైచియస్ లైన్స్, హీ కమిటెడ్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ మిస్టేక్స్ అండ్ సిన్స్.
నిత్య జీవితమును అనుభవించే నిమిత్తమై అనేక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క కార్యంలో పాల్గొని
ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు లివ్ ది డే టు డే లైఫ్ హీ అండర్టుక్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్.
కానీ రామచింతన మాత్రం వదలక,
బట్ హీ నెవర్ గేవ్ అప్ ద వర్డ్ ఆఫ్ రామ.
ప్రాకృతమైనటువంటి మార్గాన్ని అనుసరిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
హీ ఫాలోడ్ ద యూజువల్ వరల్డ్లీ పాత్.
అతనికి ఆశలు మెండు.
హీ హ్యాడ్ టూ డిజైర్స్.
ఇలాంటి కోరికల చేత కలిగినటువంటి వాడు కనుక అతనికి రాజసికమైనటువంటి యొక్క పతితుడు అని.
యాజ్ హీ హ్యాడ్ డిజైర్స్ హీ విల్ బి కాల్డ్ ఎ సిన్నర్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ రజోగుణ.
ఇంకా మూడవది,
ది థర్డ్ వన్,
జటాయువు.
జటాయు
ఇది తామసికమైనటువంటిది.
దిస్ ఇస్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ తామసిక్ క్వాలిటీ.
రామచంద్ర ప్రభు యొక్క అనుగ్రహ నిమిత్తమై
ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు ఎర్న్ ది గ్రేస్ ఆఫ్ రామచంద్రం
జరిగినటువంటి జరిగినప్పటికీ
వాట్ ఎవర్ మైట్ హావ్ హ్యాపెన్డ్ ఇన్ ద పాస్ట్,
సీతా సమేతుడై అరణ్యంలో ప్రవేశించినప్పటి నుంచి
ఫ్రమ్ ది మూమెంట్ హీ ఎంటర్డ్,
దీన్ని ఆశ్రయిస్తూ వస్తున్నాడు ఈ జటాయువు.
జటాయువు వాజ్ వాచింగ్ అండ్ వెయిటింగ్ ఫర్
కట్టగడిపడికి ఏదో ఒక విధంగా రామచంద్రుని సేవలో పాల్గొనాలని పూనుకున్నాడు.
హీ వాంటెడ్ టు అండర్టేక్ సమ్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ సర్వీస్ ఆఫ్ రామ.
నేను శ్రీరామచంద్రుడికి ఎట్టి సర్వీస్, నువ్వు ఏ విధమైనటువంటి సేవ చేయగలను,
వాట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ సర్వీస్ కెన్ ఐ రెండర్
అని ఆ సేవకై తాను కాచుకుని ఉంటున్నాడు.
హీ వాజ్ వెయిటింగ్ పేషెంట్లీ ఫర్ డూయింగ్
సీతను కొనిపోయేటువంటి సమయంలో
వెన్ రావణ వాజ్ టేకింగ్ అవే
ఈ సీతను ఎట్టైనా కూడా రక్షించి
సంభవర్ యాదర్
ఈ రావణుని సంహరించి
ఐ షుడ్ డస్
రామ సేవలో నా జీవితాన్ని అంకితం గావించుకోవాలని ఆ రావణుడితో పోరాడింది.
ఇట్ ఫాట్ విత్ రావణ విషన్ టు ఆఫర్ హర్ ఓన్ లైఫ్.
రామకార్య నిమిత్తమై తాను ఈ సేవలో పాల్గొనటం చేత తాను అనేక విధమైనటువంటి కష్టములకు గురి అయిపోయింది.
అన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ ది ఫైట్ విచ్ ఇట్ హ్యాడ్ టు వేజ్ అగెన్స్ట్ రావణ ఇట్ హ్యాడ్ టు సఫర్ వెరీ మచ్.
కానీ రాముడు అనుగ్రహించి ఆ యొక్క జటాయువును చక్కని ఆదర్శంగా అంత్యక్రియలు ఆచరించి తాను తండ్రికి కూడాను చేయలేనటువంటి ఒక సేవను ఆ జటాయుకు చేసి దానిని పావనము గావించాడు.
రామ షవర్డ్ ది గ్రేస్ ఆన్ జటాయు, పర్ఫార్మ్డ్ ఇట్స్ లాస్ట్ రైట్స్ విచ్ ఇట్ డిడ్ నాట్ పర్ఫార్మ్ ఈవెన్ టు హిజ్ ఓన్ ఫాదర్ అండ్ సేవ్డ్ దాట్ బ్లెస్డ్ ఇట్.
కనుక రామచంద్రుని యొక్క చరిత్ర త్రిగుణాత్మకమైనటువంటిదని, తన మంచి చేతలు అన్ని కూడాను త్రిగుణాలతో కూడినటువంటివని, ఈ త్రిగుణత్వమైనటువంటి యొక్క ప్రకృతికి ఈ త్రిగుణాల ప్రధాన ఆదర్శములని రామాయణం ప్రబోధిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
రామాయణ ఈజ్ టీచింగ్ దట్ దిస్ ఎంటైర్ స్టోరీ ఆఫ్ రామ ఈజ్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ త్రీ క్వాలిటీస్. ఇన్ వాట్ ఎవర్ ఆస్పెక్ట్, వాట్ ఎవర్ స్టేజ్ యూ టేక్, యూ కమ్ అక్రాస్ దీస్ త్రీ క్వాలిటీస్ ఇన్ రామ విచ్ ఆర్ అసోసియేటెడ్ అల్టిమేట్లీ విత్ క్రియేషన్.
వెల్ దేర్ వెన్ వీ వర్ డిస్కసింగ్ Jatayu and Guha, these beautiful points that Swami made we had missed, and we are grateful to Swami for having made that. And of course, as always, he is the one who makes anything fulfilled and complete. He has made the Ramkatha discussion complete. You know, Swami in brief there mentioned the story of Shabari. In the Ramkatha Ratsavahini, Swami mentions in great detail as to how Shabari, ever since she is a girl, she is always having a spiritual bent of mind. She is drawn towards God and spirituality, because of which she is staying close to the ashram of Matanga Muni, sage Matanga. And since she is not allowed into the ashram, she stays far away and tries to imbibe as much as possible. And Swami writes that she would clear the path of thorns and everything so that when the inmates of the ashram go for their morning ablutions or to take berries and come back, their feet don't get pricked. She would clear the path, she would pluck flowers and keep it ready for their worship. And all this Matanga Muni, the sage Matanga, notices. And therefore he says, you know, he tells to Shabari that, Shabari, qualifications to stay in an ashram is not based on gender. You definitely qualify to stay at the ashram, and therefore he invites her in the ashram, and Shabari begins to reside in the ashram, serving her preceptor, serving the inmates of the ashram, doing ceaseless seva with a lot of love. Because of this, you know, when the time comes that Matanga Muni has to leave his mortal frame, he calls Shabari and he says that, you know, Shabari, I'll be leaving now. And Shabari is unable to bear with that. She says, no, oh master, you can't leave me and go. I can't live without you. Don't leave me and go. And Matanga Muni says, so you don't understand. You are going to be blessed in a manner that is much greater than what you are experiencing now. And that is the reason I'm leaving you behind. Because, you know, worldly love is such that you can leave behind somebody or anything like that. But spiritual love is such that anything that you do is only for the betterment. So, coming together from a spiritual love point of view is for the betterment. Even separation is for the betterment. And that is what happens when Matanga Muni tells her that a time will come when the Supreme Lord, you know, this blessing, Matanga Muni himself is not able to enjoy. He is not staying back to look, see the Lord in human form on earth. And he doesn't have that merit. But he tells Shabari that you have earned that merit. And when the Lord comes, you should be the one who will invite him to our ashram, serve him and sanctify your life. And that is the background story for Shabari, because of which she is being granted this honor. A point that came into my mind over here was, see, when Matanga Muni is leaving Shabari, when we read the way Swami describes in Ramkatha Rasamayani, one can easily empathize with Shabari, because we have also felt the same. We said, Swami, please don't leave us. Be with us. We need you. At that time, when with that thing in mind, when I read Matanga Muni's reply to Shabari, I felt so relieved, so happy, that Matanga Muni said that even when I am leaving you, it is because you are going to get a fortune that is greater than what you have got so far. I literally felt that it was Swami conveying to me, saying that it is definitely a great bounty that you have received in my physical presence, but the very fact that I am choosing to leave you behind and separate from you physically is because what you will be blessed with in the physical absence will definitely be far greater than what you have received. Because if it was not, I would not have left you like this. Because the Lord is the most loving. If it was not for my betterment and my good, the Lord would not have left me like this. That was the consolation and solace I got as I read Shabari's story. And this was the background story.
It's a really beautiful thought. You know, when that part came about the seva she was offering to a guru, you know, it's such a beautiful thing, because from the description Swami gives, it really is, for many years she does that secret service to her guru and the inmates of the ashram. It reminded of what I once heard from one of the Swamiji's when he was giving a talk. He said, you know, how devotees offer worship to their gurus nowadays. You know, he was giving an example. He said, I was sitting and I was giving Pad Namaskar to some devotees who were coming in a queue. So there was a crowd around him. So he, like, one row of people were coming and offering their pranams to his feet. At the same time, he was talking to some other people around him, you know, giving them instructions and all that. So even as he was talking to somebody, he felt somebody was scratching his leg. And he looked down and he found that there was this devotee offering pranams, and he felt that his pranam was going unnoticed. So when he was at the Swamiji's feet, he was scratching that person's feet
gather attention,
right, to get the acknowledgement that I've offered you pranams. And he said, see, this is how people offer worship to their guru. When you look at it, you know, this is what is a sign of true devotion. Where what matters is that I should get an opportunity to serve. It's not that my service should be acknowledged and should be rewarded. That idea is not there in the concept of true devotion at all. The true devotion stops at the point where, what can I offer, and let me offer it to the best opportunity possible. Because I think one mistake which we all do is we try to judge our offering based on the response. which is probably at some times it is good, but at most times it kind of brings a selfish tinge to our offering itself.
Definitely, because when done selflessly, whether we pay attention to it or not, the result is so beautiful. If you look at the way Shabari's story goes, Shabari has collected berries as is her practice every day. Because it's phenomenal, you know. Every day for years and years she does the same thing. Goes and clears the path, collects fruits and keeps it. And Swami writes that. Collects water, everything ready. But by the end of the day, her Lord doesn't come. She consumes that fruit and water as prasadam. And then wakes up the next day to carry out again. I feel it is an inspiration for our lives also that, see, for Shabari, her job was to clear the path in front, collect fruits, collect water, everything. Each one of us have been given our own tasks. It might be in terms of the family tasks, the responsibilities that we have, in terms of our job, the responsibilities that we have, in terms of our relationships, that the responsibilities we have. All these are the tasks that have been given to us in different ways, directly or indirectly by the Lord. Let us also carry out these tasks the way Shabari did, with all sincerity, with all love, and only for the sake of pleasing the Lord. And that is what Shabari did throughout. And so on this day also, when she has done, she has selected the berries, when the Lord comes, her ultimate objective is fulfilled. But now even among the berries she has selected, you know, it is said that every day Shabari would want to keep only the best berries for the Lord. And being the illiterate woman that she was, she had no other way to identify the best berries other than tasting. So it is said that daily she would taste a little bit and keep it aside, which were sweet and which were not. And that habit continued even when Rama comes. She offers the half, not half maybe, quarter, bit berries. Berries which are already eaten by her, tasted by her. And when Lakshmana sees this, in the traditional Ramayana it is described later, when Lakshmana sees, he is mortified. He wants to stop this. What is this lady doing? But again Rama calms him, appeases him, he tells him to calm down and enjoys and tells Shabari, these are the sweetest berries I have eaten. There are berries galore in the forest, but how is it that none of those berries are sweet? That is how Swami writes in, I am not able to describe it so beautifully as Swami has done in the Ramkatha Rasavahini. But Swami writes, how is it, Shabari, that these berries are so sweet? None of the berries I have eaten have ever been so sweet. Once more, it only goes to show that the Lord looks only at the sweetness of devotion. Though Shabari was, you know, like in worldly terms, polluting those berries with her saliva, Rama found that to be the sweetest, because for the Lord, more than what you do, how you do it counts. More than how much you achieve, more than the quantity of thing done, quantum of things done, the quality of things done matters. And in quality, purity and love are foremost. If purity and love exist, the Lord is very, very happy at the offering. That is what we see in Shabari's story.
True, and of course, the other reason, as you said, Lakshmana is very, very pleased, is that he has not seen Rama enjoy eating for so long. When, you know, that is the beauty, where the moment he sees this devotional offering of Shabari, he even forgets his own grief, which he's supposed to put on, which he's supposed to pretend. You know, he indulges in this offering which he gives. And Lakshmana is very pleased with that. You know, finally here is Rama eating like this after so long. And then Rama says, you know, this is, I've lived in the forest for 11, 12 years, but I've not eaten fruits as sweet as this. This is so very sweet. And it is only the sweetness of your devotion which has, you know, entered this fruit, and it's so beautiful. But then in the course of that conversation, I'm not recollecting exactly how the mention of Mother Sita comes.
You know, actually when you said 11, 12 years, I was thinking it's actually 13 years.
Right.
Because it is said that in the last 1 year is this whole thing that happens. Right. The kidnapping of Sita and the rescue of Sita happens all in 1 year. The rest 13 years. So you can imagine how less we know of the Ramayana. We know only till they entered the forest. Possibly 10 years is lost in annihilating of so many other Rakshasas and Rakshasis. In, you know, it's only a matter of inquiry. Once, you know, once Shabari's heart is satiated, when she sees it's only the devotion and everything, and once all that is satiated, you know, matters come, she says, oh Lord, you know, I know I know that everything what has happened, that's another amazing thing that you hinted in the beginning. Shabari knows everything that has happened.
Right.
She says, I know that this has happened, you've gone there, this is there, Sita is kidnapped. And she says all this. And when she meant the very mention of the word Sita, and again Rama becomes sad, he says, oh Shabari, you've brought back those memories again. Which, you know, in that sentence is hidden the truth that devotion is such that the Lord forgets everything. Rama, of course, we know he is acting. Swami makes no secret of that. Again and again he keeps repeating that Rama is acting. But when Rama is acting, he is a very, very convincing actor, and everybody believes that Rama is in mourning, Rama is lost, Rama's heart is being wrenched out because he is away from Sita. But even such a Rama absolutely forgot Sita. Sita, who was his other half, who was part of his life, he absolutely forgot Sita, lost in the love and devotion of Shabari. So that shows the power of devotion, the power of love for the Lord, which can bind the Lord. It is said that the Lord is the most powerful, but more powerful than the Lord is love for the Lord, which binds even the Lord. That is what has happened to Rama, and that's what he tells also. Shabari, till now, you know, he doesn't say it as such, but he says that now you have reminded me of Sita, which proves that he had forgotten even Sita. And that is when Shabari says that, Lord, not only do I know, not only has Matanga Muni, my master, told me about all the things that will happen so far, I also know of what will happen in the future. I also know that you are supposed to meet with Sugriva, who is the monkey lord, the king, who is the emperor, who is supposed to be the ruler of the monkey kingdom. And with his help, you are supposed to go and destroy Lanka and, you know, win back Sita. I know all this. I know this is just a drama. This is beautiful, na? Because it shows that not only does the Lord know about the drama that is going to take place and everything, but the devotee who has become one with the Lord is also enshrined with the same knowledge and wisdom of the Lord, because the devotee also is then in absolute sync with the Lord's plan.
Right. And just refreshing my memory, you know, in her address to Lord Rama, she says that I'm so fortunate that you've come. Mm-hmm. He says, oh Lord of Janaki.
Janaki Jeevanara.
Right. You know, in the course of that conversation, she says, how fortunate I am, the Lord of Janaki, you have come. And that's when, you know, in the scene, it appears like Rama says, oh, you know about Sita. Uh-huh. I thought you did not know. And that's when she goes on to say that I know all this. And beautiful, you know, the very, very important landmark things which Swami mentions, Mother Shabari mentions, including, as you said, you know, he will delude the wisdom of Mantra and Kaikeyi and get a boon like this granted from Dasharatha, and thereby he will enter the forest. You know, to that detail she goes and she says that, you know, this is what he will do, and it is not the real Sita. The real Sita will be, you know, kept safe, and the Maya Sita will be taken away by Rama and all that.
Wow. Just to, as you started this episode, think of it. In those days, there was no telegram, telephone, post, nothing. The only way messages would be carried would be in chariots and horseback. Just imagine how connected the people were with everything around. Shabari here knew everything that has happened so far. And it's really very far where Shabari is. Because as I said, next they go to Sugriva and they meet Hanuman, and all that happens. That happens in a place called Kishkinda, which is currently to this day located in the southern part of Karnataka, which is a southern state in India.
Right.
So Shabari must have been somewhere nearby there. So from there to Ayodhya is a good 1,300 kilometers to this day. And in that age, if Shabari had got to know, definitely, and such detail, he definitely shows some kind of a wireless technology that we are not able to comprehend today. Definitely, there was more interconnectedness, there was more knowledge than what we are able to comprehend today.
And of course, after this comes the moment where, you know, Shabari casts a body, and very briefly Swami writes about that, saying that she brought forth her yogic power which she had accumulated over the years, and with that incinerated herself, and that's how Rama granted her the blessing. And dear listeners, with that concludes the story of Shabari. But we have a few minutes, and probably in this few minutes we can do something which is very important, which is definitely has to be done during a Ganesh Chaturthi. If you follow the ritualistic worship of Ganesha on this particular day, the worship is not complete without the listening of one story, one episode from the Mahabharata. They say that the worship of Ganesh Chaturthi is not complete without listening to this story. And probably we thought, this being Ganesh Chaturthi, we should have that story included as part of a satsang.
So, to briefly go through the story, among the different aspects of the Ganesh Chaturthi festival, there is a saying that one should not see the moon on this day.
Right.
Else you will face false allegations in the coming year. Now, the story behind that belief is set in Indian mythology. I feel sad that the ancient, powerful and insightful Indian metaphors have been labeled as Indian mythology.
Right.
So, but anyway, for convenience, let's use the word Indian mythology. The story not only provides the reason, it also provides a solution as how one can redeem oneself in case you commit the violation of looking at the moon today.
Right.
So, here's the story. It comes in many variants, and this is one variant that I am narrating here. It is said that the celestial wandering sage Narada, he arrived at the kingdom of Ugrasena where Lord Krishna was staying. With the intent of having darshan of the Lord, he enters the sanctum, and when he goes to Krishna, he sees that Krishna is downcast.
Mm-hmm.
And Narada is surprised. He says, Lord, what is it that is bothering you so much that the eternal smile on your face seems to have faded away? Please share it with me, you know. And Krishna looks at Narada and says, you know, what shall I say, Narada? The things that have happened in the past few days, they have perplexed me so much, I don't know what's happening. And Narada says, Lord, you speak in this manner in spite of being omnipresent. You know everything and yet you act like this. But fine, I too shall play a part in your drama. Tell me, what is the problem? So, you know, Krishna says, you know this person, you know, there's this person called Satrajit.
Mm-hmm.
Satrajit is a noble man in one of the subsidiary kingdoms.
One of the Yadavas.
Yeah, right. In the Yadava kingdom, he's a noble man. More than anything else, he was a devotee of Surya, Lord Surya. Last time we were discussing Sahasra Kavach. Apparently many of the Surya devotees go little awry later on, and that's what happened even with Satrajit. He prayed and got from Surya the Shamantaka gem, the gem which multiplies wealth and provides the owner with several measures of gold daily. Now, such is the brilliance of this gem that when Satrajit, he is one of the noble men, he comes to visit Krishna, who is the ruler. Ugrasena is the ruler, of course, but Krishna is one of the pillars of the Yadava dynasty. So when he comes to meet Krishna, people mistake Satrajit to be the sun god himself.
Mm-hmm.
That is the effulgence of that gem. So when he comes to Krishna, Krishna says that, see, this gem produces so much of gold, so much of wealth. Now, it is not good that this wealth remain in one person's hand. Let this gem be at the king's place. Let the king worship, because then, you know, whatever wealth comes from it can be used for societal benefit. And this is again another way of reinforcing the truth that, you know, always do good for society and nature. In that lies your own individual benefit. But then, you know, Satraj doesn't agree. He is very possessive of, like any one of us is, attachment, possessiveness. And as Krishna narrates this, Narada laughs out. He says, this is an instance of a less intelligent person worshipping the creation instead of the creator.
Hmm.
Satraj has missed a golden opportunity. Instead of offering everything to the divine, to you, he is choosing to go against you for the sake of his own desires. But then what happens is, not only, you know, just like any person who is rich in the worldly sense, who is rich at the same time not pure at heart, what does Satrajit do? Not only does he refuse to give the gem, he also decides to flaunt it. And he also gives it to his brother Prasenjit, Prasena, to flaunt it. What is the use of having wealth if you can't flaunt it? That is the mistake that modern day man makes, that is the mistake that Satrajit also made. So now Prasena, flaunting this jewel, goes out for hunting one day. He is killed by a lion, which takes away this jewel. And then the lion is killed by a bear. A bear no less than Jambavan himself. Jambavan,
right,
who will appear later in the Ramkatha Rasavahini.
Right.
So Jambavan kills the lion. And takes away the jewel. He takes away the jewel and goes and, you know, gives it to his daughter to play with. That's what it is. Because, you know, in another sense, so many metaphors come over here. I'll try to control going to that. Because, you know, Jambavan being a true devotee, for him, this Shyamantaka gem is a play toy. That's all. Because what is most valuable is the Lord. But then what happens is, when this happens, everyone says, you know, when Satyajit went to Krishna, Krishna asked for this jewel.
Right.
So, Satyajit spreads the rumor that Krishna is the one who has murdered Prasena and taken away the Shyamantaka gem. Now, therefore, Krishna then sets out to go and clear his name. He finds the footprints of the lion, then the footprints of Jambavan. And when he goes to Jambavan, Jambavan gets very, you know, upset. Who is this intruder? Jambavan is unable to recognize his lord from the previous avatar. There also there is a reason. It is said that at the end of the war with Ravana, when Rama was conferring boons on everybody, Jambavan says, "Oh Lord, you are so mighty, you are so handsome, you are an awesome wrestler, awesome fighter. I would like the chance of wrestling with you once." And Rama is, you know, the Maryada Purushottama. You can't imagine him wrestling with bears, which Jambavan is. So he tells Jambavan, "Not now, Jambavan, but I will grant your wish. And this is the time." Krishna and Jambavan wrestle for 28 days, or I don't know, maybe, 28 days, non-stop without break for food or water, at the end of which Jambavan is defeated. Jambavan, they say, is such a great wrestler that he says, "You have to be my Lord Rama, otherwise you couldn't have defeated me." And that is when Krishna gives him darshan as Rama, and Jambavan returns back the jewel, also gives his daughter in wedding to Krishna. Then, you know, Krishna comes back, and that is when Narada says, "Lord, what a story it is, you know, how people are, you know, they spread rumors against you." And Krishna says, "That is what I am actually perplexed about. How is it that people believed it also? Why is it that such rumors spread? And against me, people still believed it?" That is when Narada says, "Lord, you know, let me tell you, again you are acting like this, so therefore, let me play my role and let me tell you the story." He says, on the fourth day of the Bhadrapada Masa, the month of Bhadrapada, which is today, Lord Ganesha was returning to his abode in a vehicle, because this is the day when everybody worships. This is the day, right? Ganesh Chaturthi day.
Right.
When he was returning on his vehicle, the mouse, he had been well fed by his devotees. And you know, this sight was apparently very funny for the moon god in the sky, it is said. Seeing Ganesha, the huge lord, on the little mouse, and he began to laugh at Ganesha, mock Ganesha. And this upset Ganesha so much that it is said that he, in anger, broke a tusk and threw it at the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And hurling that, he pronounced the curse that, you know, you will be gone. Because of your vanity, you are priding yourself with your beauty, right? You will start losing your glory, your effulgence day by day, till you completely vanish and you will be gone. And that is why, I just slightly messed it up. He curses the moon that you will be totally gone, after which the moon apologizes and says, please don't curse me like that. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. So that is when Ganesha says that, see, a curse has been pronounced. It can't be removed, but it can be modified. I modify so that you don't grow vain, no? You will have this where you will start losing your grandeur day by day till you completely vanish. But after that, you will again start regaining your grandeur that is why we have these, you know, phases of the moon where we have the waning and waxing of the moon. That is in order to remember that when you become be humble when you reach the zenith and don't be self-critical when you reach the bottom, because everything is the Lord's will. Because in the case of the moon, it is definitely Ganesha's will that it is happening. So this way Ganesha modifies that, and Ganesha then says that, therefore, on this day which is special for me, you know, nobody will look at you. It's a lesson. Nobody should be vain. So, anybody who looks at you, O moon, will be laughed at, criticized wrongly. That is the curse.
Right.
And so, Narada says, since that day was this, Krishna, did you happen to see the moon? And Krishna says, oh, yes, yes, I remember. Actually, I didn't see the moon. But, you know, again, many variants are there. One of the variants is, when milk was being served, in the reflection of the milk, I saw partially the moon. And oh my God, Ganesha's curse is so powerful that because of that I am suffering from this. Then Narada says, oh Lord, you are the Supreme Lord, and in spite of that, you know, after that Ganesha says that in order to redeem themselves of this curse, they would have to do an elaborate ritual worship of Ganesha. Then only they can redeem. And that is what Krishna also does on the advice of Narada, and redeems himself from the curse. At the end of which he tells Narada, Narada, see, in Kali Yuga, no, these people will not have this much time to go through this elaborate ritual and do all this. Therefore, I give a blessing that in lieu of that puja, whoever hears the story of how I redeemed myself from this curse, that will be sufficient to redeem even them from the curse. And this is usually the story that is told to moonproof everybody at the end of the Ganesh Chaturthi festival puja.
So dear listeners, who has listened to this story, I think you are ready to go and see the moon, if you happen to see the moon. But you know, that's the beauty of the whole, the inner significance of this whole thing. It is like, as long as you go on listening to the stories of the Lord, as long as you do that primary sadhana of Shravanam, mm-hmm. I think everything else is taken care of, because your mind will be always focused on the Lord. Even if people criticize behind you on your back, it is not going to hurt you. It is not going to unsettle you. Probably the inner significance of this whole thing is that keep yourself indulged in the thoughts of the Lord. Keep listening to His stories. Keep listening to His glories. And probably that is our endeavor here, to provide all of you that opportunity and grab this grand opportunity to be in this position of going on narrating His story. And with much gratitude, we offer our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we're going to leave you with a song. Interestingly, yesterday I got a forward. It happens to be the 99th birth anniversary of M.S. Subbalakshmi.
Ah, yes.
Known as Mother Saraswati's reincarnation itself. Another great devotee of Swami. And this being a beautiful Ganesh Chaturthi, we're going to leave you with a song. It is a Ganesha song sung by M.S. Subbalakshmi. Dear listeners, on the other side of it, as always, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program, Love to Love. Thank you. Jai Saram.
Niye sharanam, ninadarule sharanam, sharanam. Niye sharanam, ninadarule sharanam, sharanam. Naayen palapidai seidhu kalai thunai naadi vandhen. வாயேன் திரவாத மௌனத்திருந்து உன் மலரடிக்கு தீயே நிகத்தொளி வீசும் தமிழ்க வீசி புவனே கற்பகநாயக கடவுளே பார்த்து கற்பகநாயக கடவுளே பார்த்து கற்பகநாயக கடவுளே